Hello, one and all, and welcome to Film Fragments, a podcast where we take fragments of an actor, director, and genre and tell you our favorites from their catalog. My name is Brian Sheffield. I'm your host, and I'm very excited to welcome you guys to this week's episode of Film Fragments, where today we're going to be taking a look at our favorite film starring Rebecca Hall in honor of Godzilla X-Con, not Godzilla vs. Con, because that already came out. Godzilla X-Con. Very excited to delve into the career of Rebecca Hall. In my opinion, one of the most talented people in the industry right now. She's obviously acted in a lot of films. She's done some stage work, but she's also directed too. And we'll definitely give a shout out to that later on this episode. But I'm very excited to delve into the career of Rebecca Hall with our guest for today. That's right, plural. There's two guests today. I haven't done the two guest show since the beginning of this podcast. And I'm over the moon excited to welcome these two guests. They both have been on the podcast before. I cannot wait to see how chaotic this episode's going to be, because these two together, magic comes together, but also chaos ensues. So I am very excited to welcome back Morgan and Chels to Film Fragments. How are you guys doing today?
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to be here. Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you so much. We've already been demons in preparation for this, and I cannot wait to unleash full demon.
So excited. I'm very, very excited to have you guys on and to talk about a topic like Rebecca Hall. And usually I have these questions that I throw at the start of the episode, but we're going to do a different question at the end of this episode. So that's very fun. So to pose a very random question unrelated to Rebecca Hall, I've had both of you on the show before talking about your love for film, what you guys do and what have you with your podcast, writing, etc. I want to ask, how did you two meet? I want to throw a random question. How did you guys meet and come together?
So the Community Rewatch podcast that I have done now and a rewatch pod where we just watch TV, we were looking for guests and I slid into Morgan's DMs because I had followed her, but we were like not friends at that point. And I'm like, yo, I saw you like Community. Do you want to be a guest on this podcast? Also, I won't be on that episode. And then from there, I don't know what happened, but we just like clicked and we're being weird. Like just,
yes,
we liked all the same weird stuff. And now we are just like insane demons together.
Yeah. It's the chaotic Leo energy that I don't understand astrology, but I do know that there are cosmic forces that I just have to lean into. And that was one of them. So that's how Chels and I became friends.
Yeah. Love that. I love that. I love that. And speaking of something that we all love, Rebecca Hall. Yeah. So to pose the question to you guys, when I reached out to the two of you to come on to an episode and the idea of Rebecca Hall came our way, why did the two of you choose to talk about Rebecca Hall? Why do you think a lot of people get excited whenever they see Rebecca Hall's name attached to a project? And what makes you guys such a fan of Rebecca Hall? Let's start off with you, Morgan. Why do you love Rebecca Hall so much?
Yeah, I think she is just the epitome of excellence. She's a really incredible actress. I mean, she's been afforded the opportunity because her father was a renowned stage director and her mother was an opera singer, which I think is so cool. And she definitely has honed her craft to be both a really incredible actress as well as an incredible filmmaker, which I know we'll talk about her first film that she wrote and directed. But yeah, she's super engaging on screen and she brings that theater quality to cinema that sometimes I think that people that exist in both tend to separate the two. And she has certainly married those qualities to exist in all of those spaces.
Completely agree. And just like how we came together on it, I just feel like every time we saw her in a movie, we would just be like, you know who's really great in this movie? Rebecca Hall. And it just became such a running theme that it's like we just accidentally clicked and fell in love with Rebecca Hall together and everything they're doing. We're also in love with her hot husband, who has to be brought up because, like,
hot husband.
What a man. Oh, my gosh. He is also a really great actor. So everyone go check his stuff out.
Morgan Spector. He's amazing.
Right. But every time she's on screen, even in bad movies, and I'm going to talk about some bad movies, I'm just like, man, she's just got it. She's got that one thing, the unspeakable it factor, where you're so engaged with what she's doing and she elevates every project she's in. Like, so many movies would be so much worse without her. Like, literally every single one, I think, because she's not always given great roles. And yet, every time I see her, I'm like, oh, so good. Amazing. Love her.
Yeah, I agree. Anytime that she's on screen in any project, good or bad, she always finds a way of elevating the material that she's given, even if the material she's given isn't the best to work with. I think she's one of those actors that has also showcased that she could really do any genre. She's not someone that sticks to one specific kind of role, which I really appreciate. She's done her fair share of dramas and comedies and action films and thrillers, horror movies, period pieces. She's done a lot. And I was saying to Morgan before you hopped onto the College House, Rebecca Hall's filmography, while small, she's done a handful of really interesting projects and worked with so many cool filmmakers and actors and what have you. And obviously, she has done a lot of stage work as well. Morgan brought up how her father was heavily involved with the stage and her mother was an opera singer, which, like Morgan said, that's a really cool combination of parents, I think. And I do hope that down the road, Rebecca Hall continues to be given more opportunities, especially leading roles. She has done a lot of leading roles, but I would love to see her do something a little bigger to make more people aware of Rebecca Hall, not just us film fans and what have you. I want the whole world to know Rebecca Hall. I want her to be one of those people that everybody knows. But considering that her filmography has a lot of smaller, independent, lower budget projects, I do like that she has found a following amongst us, the film community and what have you. And I also think it's really cool that she has stepped behind the camera as well. And you know what? Before we get into the top five list, I feel like we have to shout this movie out. I was going to save it for the end of the episode, but I figure why not just spend a few minutes right now talking about her wonderful directorial debut, Passing. Unfortunately, when I told Morgan and Chelsea about this episode, I said that we couldn't include this movie on the list because she's not in it. We're focusing specifically on the films that she's acting in. So I know that you two are very big fans of Passing, which came out in 2021. It was her directorial debut, like I said. Talk a little bit about your guys' thoughts on the movie. Why are you guys such a fan of that movie? And is it specifically for Rebecca Hall's direction, the writing, the performances? Like, what makes that film mean so much to both of you?
I mean, I was the annoying person that saw it at Sundance and then would randomly bring it up in conversation to Chelsea all the time to be like, one day when you get to see Passing, your mind will be blown. Yeah, I just think it's a perfect adaptation. And I think in a year when there were a lot of adaptations that women were doing, that they didn't really have a personal connection to the stories that they were telling, and the stories felt really rushed, where Rebecca Hall spent like over a decade trying to get this film made, trying to, you know, really capture what Nella Larson was talking about in Passing, the novella itself. And I think her dedication to the project and to making sure that it was as honest as possible is what makes it such an incredible film.
Yeah, just the fact that she took her time and did her homework and was really open to all the ideas, and just like in her personal life, reconciling that history and the problems that came from her ancestors that made this such a personal story for her. And then just the performances are so dynamic, and everything is so subtle. Nothing is played for the back of the house, not anything. And I am obviously a Tessa Thompson stan. People know this. I love Ruth Negga. And you're watching these two people, and Rebecca Hall doesn't shy away from anything that another white director would. She just embraces the hard parts, the messy parts, the queerness of it all. And I really just, I'm so fond of that film. And I had read like the novella like in college and everything, and I reread it before the movie. And then like afterwards, like I got me and Morgan like the hardback script books of it because we're obsessed. We are the number one and two fans of that film. Our friend Jen is number three. And I would just look side by side. I'm like, dang, she really did this. And she made it very intentional, the script. And it's just such an impressive work. And I wish more people would watch it. Also, I wish it would get a physical media release.
Yeah, I saw that film at the New York Film Festival in 2021. And I wasn't as high on it as everybody else. And I do owe myself a rewatch. I've only seen it once, but I remember really being taken aback by how she approached that story with so much poignancy and honesty. And it was really interesting to see her tackle a story like that, especially for her first film behind the camera. And I think I remember when I started talking to Morgan a few years ago and I brought up Passant, I had said that, in my opinion, it's one of the stronger directorial debuts from an actor. I was really impressed to see the direction that she took that story and how, for a first-time filmmaker, it didn't even feel like that was her first film behind the camera. It felt like she had made a few films prior, and it was really exciting to see her work with those actors and everything. And, I mean, those are probably my favorite performances from the two leads in Tessa Thompson and Ruth Negga. I think I don't think they've ever been better, and I do like both of them a lot. And the rest of the ensemble in that movie is also outstanding. It's shot beautifully. It's paced very well. I really like the aesthetic of it. I like how it nails the period that it's set in. And yeah, it is unfortunate that movie isn't really talked about as much. Netflix picked it up, I remember, and that was such a stacked year for Netflix. They had a lot of movies come out that season. I remember that like it was yesterday. What was their main one? Like The Power of the Dog, they had that come out that year. That was like the big one. It was like Power of the Dog, Tick, Tick, Boom, a few other films, I believe. But Passant should have been getting the same recognition as like Power of the Dog and Tick, Tick, Boom and all those other movies. But yeah, it's great. And, you know, if she had acted in it, if the film turned out the same way and she was in it, it would be in my top five for sure. Would it be number one for me? Tough to say, but I do really like that movie a lot, and I am due for a rewatch, and I agree with Chelsea. It definitely should get a physical release, so Criterion, get your butt on that, like, now, and give it a proper physical release, because even though I'm not as high on the movie as you two are, I would definitely buy that on physical in the heartbeat. So, now going into our top five Rebecca Hall list, I am so curious to see what you guys put as your five films. I told you guys off-air that I'm not very proud of my list. I mean, I like all the films on my list, and, you know, they left quite an attachment on me in different ways, and Rebecca's obviously great in everything that she's in, that I've seen at least, but, I mean, I doubt that she's bad in anything like you guys said. So, without further ado, let's get into our top five Rebecca Hall's films list, and we're going to start off with Chels. So, what is your number five favorite Rebecca Hall film of all time?
So, again, I asked Morgan her list ahead of time so I could purposely be different. And so I made the bold decision to pick movies that are actively bad, a couple of these, but she is amazing and is the reason why people probably still watch them. So my number five is The Gift, a film that actively hates her character. And I don't think Jason Bateman and Joel Edgerton are okay in that movie. But, I mean, my girl thrives in a nice little psychological thriller. She knows the assignment, and the way she modulates this performance of a woman who, at first, we're like, is she having a breakdown? What is going on? Is she just like, is she the problem? No, it's actually the men that are the problem. At every point, this film is mean to her, and she plays it so well. And at the end, all you are doing is thinking about her and how all of these men have failed her. And I hate this movie, but I think she is genuinely amazing, like Oscar worthy in it. And yeah, so that is my number five, The Gift. Not a good movie, but she is amazing in it.
Morgan, what is your take on The Gift?
I mean, exactly the same. It's an actively misogynistic film, and yet she thrives, she survives, she is a guiding light. Yeah.
And I know part of the film's point is, like, misogyny and stuff, but it doesn't tell it in a nuanced way.
No.
But how she deals with all the terrible things happening to her character is very interesting. I don't want to get into it too much. Like, the twist actively makes me mad. But I think she still plays this woman who is being terrorized so well. And by the end, you're just like, yep, like, get out, get away. You're okay. You'll be okay.
Well, unfortunately, I have the gift at number five for me. I just want to say that your opinions are totally valid, and I totally respect what you guys are saying. I will say right off the bat, I have only seen this movie once. I saw it when it came out. I have not revisited it at all. I remember walking into this movie, and this was, God, 9 years ago. It's nuts that it came out that long ago. I remember seeing the trailer for this before every movie at that time, and I'm like, good God, this looks like absolute garbage. And I like the actors in it. I literally like all three of them. So watching that trailer made me go, wow, this looks absolutely shitty. And then the movie came out, and people were saying that it was a solid directorial debut and a solid little thriller, and I'm like, no way, there's no way that this is that good. So then I went on one of those discount Tuesdays to go see, where I only paid $5. This was obviously the pre-AMC A-list, pre-movie pass days, so I'm like, all right, we'll see how this movie turns out, whatever. I remember going on a Tuesday morning during the summer. There was nobody in the theater. It was heavenly going into the theater and not having to see anyone else there. And I was so surprised by this movie. And yes, there are some problems that I had with the twists and turns and everything. I thought that for a directorial debut, there were definitely some issues with the way that Joel Edgerton directed it. But in terms of directorial outings from an actor, it's very interesting that all three of the people in this movie are actors who have eventually gone on to direct. It's very interesting. I didn't even think of that until now. Like, Bateman's directed, Rebecca's directed, and Joel Edgerton has directed before. So it's really interesting to see that. I did think that this was a pretty solid little cat and mouse thriller. I thought the concept was really interesting. I don't think it fully landed in its execution, but I have to agree with what you two said about Rebecca Hall. She was my favorite element of this movie. I remember walking out of the film going, wow, Rebecca Hall is incredible in this, like genuinely fantastic in this. Very on the edge of your seat performance. You don't know exactly what's going to go down with her character, and you're rooting for her. You're scared for her. You're terrified for her. And I think she does everything she can with the material. Again, I'm not as low on this movie as the two of you are, but I do remember walking out of it just pleasantly surprised. I always love whenever I go into a movie expecting to hate it, and then I walk out of it surprised. It's not a perfect movie by any means. It's not this God's gift to cinema by any means either. But I do admire what everybody was doing here. Some of the executions didn't stick the landing for me, but overall, I enjoyed the gift, and it's not one that I've had any desire to go back and rewatch. Honestly, like, it really may just be a one-time watch for me, and I'm okay with that. I liked the movie. I didn't love it by any means, but I loved her performance in it.
Yeah, she's the rooting factor. She holds it together. The film, it is really just a scripting problem. It is Men Are Not Okay, like the movie. And I can see where Joel Edgerton has the potential to be a better director in other things. I'm still kind of waiting for the other things to come. But yeah, she is just so good in a film that is not on her side.
Do you guys like his second directing outing? I for me personally, I preferred The Gift over Boy Erased. I wasn't as high on Boy Erased as I wanted to be.
Boy Erased is one of those, like, I love Lifetime movies because they know what they are. His is kind of like a Lifetime movie that doesn't know it's a Lifetime movie. So that's why I'm like, let's hope he does something better. Because, like, again, I don't think he was the person to tell that story.
I agree. That was my takeaway from that movie. When I walked out and I'm like, I could see the potential of him being like a great director, but he was not the right person to tell this story. I liked his performance in it, but I don't think that he was like the right person to direct it. And it certainly wasn't an unwatchable movie. Like, it was competently made and well acted and everything, but he was just not the right person to bring that story to life.
And I think his problem is he should not be the person writing these movies.
I agree. Agreed. Like,
I think they might need more of a feminine touch or a queer touch if he's gonna dive into those topics because he's not handling them very well.
Agreed. Agreed. Do you have anything to add to that, Morgan?
I mean, I literally forgot what his second film was. That's how memorable Boy Erased is. Yeah, I just think Joel Edgerton maybe should watch Passing and learn how a film is crafted in a very nuanced and heartfelt manner, and then maybe come back to acting. Yeah, just stick to acting.
He's a good actor.
Yeah.
He's a very good actor. He definitely should just stick to acting. So now transition to Morgan's number five. What is your number five?
So my number five is a very wild card, spooky movie. It is from 2011. It is called The Awakening. It is British. It is gothic. It is kind of trying to be the others, and I love it. Rebecca Hall basically plays a skeptic who is going to a haunted house to see if there really are ghosts there. And Dominic West is there. Melda Staunton is there. Other British people are there. It's a good spooky time. And I just think that she's so wonderful in kind of leaning into the time period, because again, this is like after World War One. You know, you have a lot of people who are scamming others and exploiting their grief. And I also love that she gets to be British because she's actually British, and she normally has to put on an American accent for a lot of her projects. So that is why I have picked The Awakening as number five.
I have not seen this movie. Chels, what is your take on this movie, if you've seen it or not?
I love a good vibes movie, and this movie has vibes to it, and Rebecca Hall thrives in the vibes. Like, I can tell that it was probably a fun experience. Somehow, I also love The Others, so it's like my cup of tea, and like this is like a movie I kick off my list because Morgan had it, so yeah. And I put the gift.
Yep, it's a good one. Five. Yeah.
So now going into our number four is, what is your pick? Chels, let's start with you.
I picked another psychological thriller that is not like a great movie. It's messy, but I see the potential in the artists behind it. Like, also, if body horror is not your thing, don't watch it. It is Resurrection from a couple years ago. I saw it, I think, via Sundance, maybe? I think maybe. I cannot remember. Actually, yeah, I do. I'm looking at it now. It premiered at Sundance. So I just, like, remember seeing this movie because I'm like, oh, Rebecca Hall's in something. I'll buy that ticket. And then I'm like, oh, my gosh. This movie is wild. So much is happening. But, again, much like Vibes, I love how she can play a woman just spiraling into insanity. Nobody does it like her. And it makes this movie that's probably like 3 stars at best without her, like, so much better, because you're like, oh, is she like okay? Is she like having a episode? Can you trust what she is saying in her point of view? You can't, but also it is insane. And I loved it. It's my kind of crazy, but I do have to look away at the end. There's like some moments there where I'm like, oh no. But yeah, she's just giving so many great, incredible performances in psychological thrillers, and then just seems like such a well-adjusted human, and I find that impressive.
Morgan, what is your take on this movie? Is it on your list, or is it not on your list?
It is not on my list. I hate body horror. Mm-hmm. I don't want it. But up until it falls apart in the third act for me, it's an incredible performance. Like, the whole time I was just stressed because she was stressed, and she's both an unreliable narrator while also you can understand that she's a woman who's being gaslit. And I think having to hold those two things at the exact same time is a challenge that I don't know how she pulled it off, but she did.
And the concept's almost too high to have any realistic chance of sticking a landing. but I just love what she's doing in it. And Tim Roth is also very good, even though like the film is not about or for him. And I find it really impressive. Like everybody in it was like doing some really solid work. But also, like, trigger warning, if you don't like body horror, don't watch it.
So this is not on my list either. I did see this back at Sundance in 2022. I saw like 30 plus movies at that Sundance because that was the entirely virtually. I miss when they had everything available for the virtual right. people, because not everyone wants to drop thousands of dollars to go to that cold fucking city. Like, I'm sorry, like, not all of us have the time and the money and the luxury to do that. Plus, some of us just don't want to do that. We want to stay in the comfort of our own home, on our couch, in our beds, whatever, just watching movies and
it
everything.
It is cold in Utah. Nobody wants to go there in January.
It's and also then, extremely ableist to not have a virtual option for critics and filmgoers who can't physically travel.
Do they not know how much money they're making by implementing the virtual option? They probably made such good bank in 2021 and 20. Now, obviously, the 2021 circumstance was different because COVID was still very high at that point. And then 2022, I remember it was supposed to be a hybrid, but then they changed to the virtual like very last minute. I remember that like it was yesterday. And then last year and this past year, they only have a select amount of films available virtually, which, I mean, yeah, they still have some very good titles, but it's like, I'm a proponent of the theatrical experience. I would love to obviously see everything in the theater if I can, but if I have the opportunity to watch something at home, I'm not going to pass on that either. Like, if I have to go to the bathroom in the middle of the movie, I don't have to worry about sitting there and leaving in the middle of the movie. I could just pause it, go to the bathroom, then come back and finish it. And it's great. So Resurrection is, like I said, not on my list. Unfortunately, this was one of the films at Sundance that year that I was very disappointed in. I'm not a huge body horror guy, but I've become a bit of a – I'm slowly making my way through the body horror and everything. I'm just not a big horror guy, period. They don't really do anything to like fully hit me. And whenever a good horror movie comes out, I will obviously celebrate it. But this was one that really just didn't do anything for me. The entire time I was watching this, I'm like, I'm just waiting for something interesting to happen. And there's a part of me that wonders what it would have been like if I had seen this in the theater. Would I have liked it more? Who knows? But Rebecca Hall's performance is absolutely monumentally brilliant. Top three Rebecca Hall performance in this movie, in my opinion. She is so good in this. And I was into it when it first started, but then it just progressively got worse for me. And then by the end, I'm just like, I'm so out of it. I don't really care anymore. And then it just ended.
It's a film that is not good in a festival setting where you're trying to watch so many movies in a row.
Yeah.
It's like not good for that. So it's like, oh, I need a moment away from this movie.
Yeah, that's why I put
it before firing up the next one. And it doesn't
exactly
do that to you.
Exactly. I just felt like it really didn't add any pizzazz or anything. But Rebecca's incredible in it. She's so good in this. And if anyone out there is interested in watching this, yes, trigger warning for the body horror, but she definitely is the main reason to check this out because her performance really is like next level. It's so good. And then Morgan, going to your number four, what is your pick?
If this lets me unmute myself. Your thing is trying to silence me again like it did last time, Brian. My number four pick is also a spooky movie. It is, so it technically came out in 2020, didn't get a wider release until 2021. That is The Night House. I think of her spooky movies that have been coming out lately, this is the one that I connected with the most just because I love a haunted house. I love someone who's feeling like they are unsafe in what is supposed to be the most safe place for them in the entire world. I think it tackles grief really well. I think that she understands a lot of what her character is going through in a really nuanced and human way, which is, I've already mentioned the others, but I feel like she brings that Nicole Kidman level to horror films, which is, you know, yes, a lot of people don't connect with horror, they don't appreciate it, but it's a really incredible art form to talk about social commentary, and she very much understands that and does that with The Night House. So that's my number four pick.
Chelsea, what is your take on The Night House? Is it on your list or is it not on your list?
It is fully one of those movies I purposely took off my list, and I just was like, Resurrection. I will talk about this other one. Night House, such a good movie. Easily one of her best. I am obsessed with it. When it came out, I was just like, I'm not a spooky girly, like, which is wild because I'm putting so many spooky movies on here, but she is so legitimately good. And that is such a stressful film. And I like a film that can actively put that feeling of stress into your body and just make you on edge. Because a lot of films try and fail because you see what's going to happen. And that's a film where I was like, oh man, what's happening next? Oh gosh, am I okay? And it's, that's cinema, baby. That's one I wish I could have seen in a theater.
This is a pass for me. It's very high on my list, so I cannot wait to talk about it when I get to it. Number four for me is going to be Professor Marston and the Wonder Women. This is a film I actually just watched for the first time yesterday. I definitely owe myself a rewatch. If you go on my Letterboxd and see my rating, that's definitely not the like actual rating. I might bump it up again right after we get off this call, but I really dug this film, and this was one that I really wanted to see when it came out, but I unfortunately missed it. It was during college and I just didn't have as much time to go watch movies as I wanted to. And this was during a very important period of college where I was making my student film at that point. So I just couldn't go watch movies. I had to focus on making my own film and everything. And by the time I was done making this film, it wasn't even in theaters anymore. And I'm like, well, I guess I gotta wait for it. Fast forward 7 years later, and now I'm finally watching it. And I really enjoyed this a lot. I didn't even know that this story was a thing. It's pretty crazy. I remember when this was coming out, I didn't even know about this even existing. I thought it was a coincidence that this came out the same year as Wonder Woman. I remember seeing the poster and I'm like, it's like the same color and the same look as the Wonder Woman poster and everything. So basically, for people who don't know what this is, this does follow William Moulton Marston, who was the creator of the Wonder Woman character, and involves his wife, Elizabeth, who's played by Rebecca Hall, and then their life partner that comes in, Olive Byrne, who's played fantastically by Bella Heathcote. And this is a very seductive, alluring romance period piece type of film. I really love the relationship between all three of these people. I think all of them are great in this film, but specifically to talk about Rebecca Hall, I mean, what else can you say about Rebecca Hall? It's the same thing that you say about her in every single film. She knocks it out of the park. She kicks so much ass in this role. She's so great. She just finds a way of having a great banter and with all of her co-stars. I don't know how she's able to do it as well as she does. Even with, like you guys said, the material may not be that good, she always knocks it out of the park. And I really love the chemistry that she has with both of these people. She's great when she's with Luke Evans. She's great when she's with Bella Heathcote. Some of the most like captivating stuff that I've seen in recent memory in terms of romance, on-screen romance between the two of them, especially Rebecca Hall and Bella Heathcote. I'm like, wow, I really like buy this. Like, you forget that they're acting. You feel like they're actually like enemies turned lovers. It's a very confusing relationship, but it's very, very moving. And if you're a fan of stories of how characters come to life and everything, this is definitely worth checking out for sure. It's like so unconventional from like your typical biopic. There's definitely some biopic tropes to be found here, but the performances are what makes this film so incredibly engrossing to watch. I mean, all three of these guys are so good in this film, and I think that's the main reason to check this out. I really enjoyed this, and I'm definitely looking forward to checking it out again down the road. So that is my number four. Chelsea, is this film not on your list, or is it on your list?
It's my number three.
Sweet, sweet. And Morgan, is it on your list as well?
It is also my number three, so perfect segue.
It's perfect segue, so take it away, ladies. Why is this your number three?
I mean, it's gay, and it is such a thoughtful portrayal of polyamory as well. And I love director Angela Robinson. Everybody go watch Debs, a movie that was made for $12 in a dream and is so much fun and also so queer. But this movie is so thoughtful in how it portrays this like love story amongst this like group of people. And I'm just obsessed with like how tender it is in the end and how these people genuinely care for each other. And like, I don't think the jealousy is really any sort of jealousy or anything in it. It's just people trying to figure things out. And it's one of my favorite kind of movies. So I love that people are able to easily access this film as well. It's always been available on streaming. So yeah, Morgan, what are your thoughts on this movie? I don't think we've ever talked about this one.
Yeah, like, I don't think so either.
Outside of us saying we love it.
Yeah, it is a power throuple film, basically. I just love that they are people who are very constrained by society, and it's them having to figure out how to exist outside of societal norms and societal constraints, especially as the film progresses. We're kind of getting into a very big whiplash from social progression, and, you know, we had socialist policies during World War II. Not all of the policies were socialist, though. This is America. But, you know, we kind of had that happening. And then by the 1950s, which is kind of a huge time period that for this film, we're really coming into a lot of social fascism and a lot of othering of people who are not in a very specific group. And I think that Angela Robinson as a director knew exactly what she was doing in crafting this story. And just Rebecca Hall is so engaging and she's so powerful. Like, she literally comes in just swearing up a storm about how she's pissed off about men silencing her. And she just carries that throughout while also having a lot of vulnerability and tenderness. And yeah, it's just a great film.
Agreed. It's so good. I'm very excited to watch it again when I get the chance. Okay, my number three. Unfortunately, this is one where she's not a huge role. Her role is definitely pivotal to the story, but I have to just say that this filmmaker, I know that there are people out there that aren't a fan of this particular filmmaker, and I get it. Not everyone has to vibe with everything. It's totally fine. There are filmmakers that are celebrated that I don't vibe with and what have you, but I think in terms of this guy's films, he's very successful. He's very popular. A lot of the film people do have a lot of respect for him in terms of the scope that he presents on screen and some of the stories that he presents. But I think when you look at his filmography, this is one that unfortunately doesn't get talked about as much as it should. So I'm going to go with The Prestige. I know that there are people that think that this is the worst thing that Christopher Nolan has directed, which I think is absolutely ridiculous that people think that. I get it that it may not be as action-packed as some of his other movies and what have you. It's definitely a required taste, but I'm a guy that always has found stories about magicians and everything to be quite fascinating, and I really like how this film kind of takes a thriller approach to it. I like the way that this film is conveyed. I think it's shot beautifully. I think the aesthetic is really cool. I think Nolan nailed the time period of this, through the costumes, the hairstyle, and the score is really great, and the performances from everybody, I think everyone knocks it out of the park here. And I do love the rivalry between Christian Bale and Hugh Jackman. I think they work off each other really, really well. And then you add Scarlett Johansson in there. You add David Bowie in a really cool performance here. Andy Serkis is here, Michael Caine. And then you have Rebecca Hall, who I feel, while her screen time is not as high as it should be, I mean, every movie should have a bunch of Rebecca Hall. That's just a given. But I really do think it is cool that she got to be in a film like this, especially so early in her career. This was very early Rebecca Hall. And to get the opportunity to work with this filmmaker and these actors so early in your career is very, very exciting. And I would like to hope that one day she gets to do another big scale project like this. I found the twists and turns in this to be really, really cool as well. I don't really know what else I could really say about this movie. I feel like I've talked about it verbatim on this podcast. Every opportunity I've gotten to talk about The Prestige, I've talked about it, because anytime that there's like an actor involved, or whenever I did my Christopher Nolan discussion, this film would come up, because in my opinion, it's criminal how this film doesn't get the recognition that it deserves, especially compared to other films from Christopher Nolan. It's not my favorite thing that he's directed. It's certainly not the best thing that he's directed either, but it is, in my opinion, one of the more underrated entries of his filmography. And yeah, people should talk about it, considering that everybody loves Christopher Nolan. I don't know why this film doesn't get the recognition it deserves. So The Prestige is my number three. I feel like this isn't on either of your lists. I kind of figured, but I'm curious to hear your guys' thoughts on this film individually. So, Chelsea, let's start with you. What is your take on The Prestige, if you've seen it?
I saw this in theaters, y'all, because Chelsea sees everything. But, yeah, again, I am so hot and cold on Christopher Nolan. I'm a noted Oppen hater. But I do think The Prestige is one of his top three films. But I'm the girl who loves Interstellar. That is noted on this show. Again, that's my vibe. And The Prestige is very much in the Interstellar section of his filmography, where I'm just like, this is a film that I am dialed into. I like trickery. I like scammers and schemers. And that's what this film is full of. Also, David Bowie. I mean, that automatically makes it an amazing experience. So I actually really like this movie, and I do think she's very good in a supporting role. Is it one of her best? No, but I think it's a really good movie.
Morgan?
Yeah, I feel like Christopher Nolan has a very long documented history of not being able to write women very well. And so I think the bar is very low on what female actors can do in his films. But I think that Rebecca Hall probably gives one of my favorite performances from a female actor in any Christopher Nolan film. Cause I think while everyone was kind of, you know, playing for the back of the house, she was not. She was giving a very quiet performance in a very loud, very male dominated film. And I think that there can sometimes be a tendency when you're in a very loud movie to lean into that as well. And she was extremely restrained, understood who her character was, and didn't lean into any of those tendencies that another actor might kind of find themselves falling into.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. And
because those two guys, they are performers mm-hmm. within the film. They are like outward yeah. love attention. And she knew exactly what she was supposed to do, which was ground one of the Christian Bale characters
yeah.
and keep him at a level. And she's the key to the twist of the film,
yeah.
which I think's nice. The film doesn't serve her in the very end, which is a little upsetting. I wish they maybe would have gave her a few more scenes. But mm-hmm. again, she's great in what she's doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I feel like if we're going to talk about female performance in a Christopher Nolan film, this is the one to discuss. Yeah. So yeah, love it.
And now our top two. This is very interesting to see what you guys are going to put as your top two films. I have no idea the direction you guys are going to go, although I kind of have a feeling of what one of the films is going to be. So Chelsea, what is your second favorite Rebecca Hall film of all time?
I mean, my second favorite Rebecca Hall film might be my favorite film of all time. It is a film that I came out of the pandemic, and it was like one of the first things I saw in a theater. Again, like you said, there is nothing like an empty movie theater. Me and my nephew, we were just by ourselves watching Godzilla versus Kong, and she is a movie star, baby. This is a film that should not work. It should be stupid. It is an under 2 hour masterpiece where she actually brings humanity to it. She grounds a child performance. I would not make this number one. I am not that crazy. Or am I? But no, I do think she makes this film worth watching and actually grounds the heart of the film, which is the Kong storyline of it all. And I just love it, and I cannot wait to see what she does next, because guess what? That other Godzilla, X-Kong, New Empire, also under 2 hours. They got me. That's already like a 3-star film for me. But I love like almost all Godzilla versus Kong movies, like across the board. I've got the Godzilla Criterion. It's the best art on any Criterion. Like, I just love my monsters. I love my big guys. I've already pre-ordered the like popcorn bucket and the Godzilla plushies, so I'm ready for the new one.
this
I love
is the
movies.
This is the chaos that I've been waiting for. This is the chaos that I've been waiting for in this episode. I'm so excited that we got here. I really thought you were going to put that number one just for the fuck of it, but I really thought that that's where you were going to go.
I mean, could I have? Sure. Would I? Probably not, because I think she does have a clear number one in her filmography. But it is great that, like, you get these, like, silly monster movies and you don't remember these people's names or any of the characters, usually.
Mm-hmm.
Like, ask me about any of those Godzilla movies leading up to this. I think they're all bad, even the one people like from 2014. It's not a good movie, y'all. I saw that drunk and sober.
I like that movie. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'll watch it because it's a Godzilla movie. Is it a great movie? No. But
no, it's not great.
She brings something that makes you, she actually brings humanity to it, to where you actually care about the human characters, because you don't care about them in any of these other movies except maybe Godzilla Minus One and like OG Godzilla. So I think it's interesting that she was able to convey so much without giving a big performance, but she was still giving movie star.
Morgan, what is your opinion on Godzilla versus Kong?
I mean, without Godzilla versus Kong, we would not have Passing in its
that
iteration, because that's
there's
where she met.
Line.
Yeah, that's where she met Alexander Sarsgaard, and then he got to play Ruth Negga's racist husband, and he does a fantastic job. I love that she met him and was like, "Would you like to play an awful white man?" And he said, "I'm here to bring range."
And he's played many of them. He's played many awful white men.
Many of them.
And here's the thing. You get an Emmy winner who's been in successful movies. That brings you financing. That's mm-hmm. very important. Because, like, again, Passing is a miracle of a film. And the fact that he was able to attach a name and get some money towards a film that, like, we know was not going to make money, because we're lucky if any of these movies hit streaming anymore. Most of the time, they're tax write-offs at this point. It's really cool to see that somebody did leverage a big blockbuster film and make something really special from those relationships.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, we have to respect and love that first and foremost, but also, like, it's a fun time. And for someone who is Team Kong, like, to have Rebecca Hall on the right side of history in the film from the get-go is also really wonderful. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kong is the ultimate hero. It's
he
like
really is.
He lost the battle, but he won the war.
Exactly. But now he and Godzilla are a team, and I'm assuming in this next one. Mm-hmm. So that's also magical.
Magic.
Yeah, I could recognize that the movie is not perfect by any means, but it is a very entertaining time. I did have fun when I went to go see this, and I'm very hot and cold on these monster movies. I'm definitely not like I don't hate them, but I have to be in the right mood to watch them sometimes. And like, there are some genuinely great monster movies where there are really good human characters and good monster elements too. With these Godzilla, Kong, MonsterVerse movies, whatever, yes, the human characters aren't exactly the most fleshed out. They're not the most written. But, I mean, do we really go to these movies to watch the human characters? No, not necessarily. We go to watch the monster stuff. And the monster stuff in this movie delivers. It's great. The monster stuff is incredible. It's fantastic. And just harkening back to Alexander Skarsgård for a second, I want to say that he, despite playing a lot of very antagonistic people, he actually is a very down-to-earth human being. I've met him. He is so nice and so polite. I really have a lot of respect for him as an actor and as a person in general. But yeah, Godzilla versus Kong, while not my favorite, it was fun to see Rebecca Hall in that. And I agree with you, Chels, in terms of the human side of that movie. She definitely was the one with the most gravitas. She definitely was the most engaging of the human characters. And she's the one that you cared about the most of all the human characters in that movie. So I am interested to see.
And that's why they brought her back for the sequel.
I was just about to say, it kind of makes sense why she's coming back for the sequel. I'm curious to see what she does in the sequel. And we'll talk about our anticipation for that later on in the episode. But yeah, Godzilla vs. Kong, while not the incredible movie that I had wanted it to be, I had a good time with it. And with that being said, Morgan, what is your second favorite Rebecca Hall film of all time?
So I know that this is probably going to be one that is talked about later on, But I'll just get the party started and talk a little bit about from 2016, Christine. I think Rebecca Hall gives a powerhouse performance. It is basically a masterclass in how to be an actor that tackles mental health in a very human and thoughtful and empathetic manner that I don't think that we see on screen very often. And I rewatched it today. I know how it ends. And every single time it just shatters me because she gives so much humanness to a character that I think who was a real woman whose life has been sensationalized because of a single act. And I think she was really searching for the human that was Christine Chubbuck. And so I really love this film and her performance.
I have not seen this movie, unfortunately. I started it up yesterday and I just really wasn't in the right headspace for it. Not to say that I wasn't into what I was watching. It's just I know that I have to be in the right state of mind when watching a movie like that, because I also know the story. I'm well aware of what happens. And I'm so curious to see how it's depicted on screen. I've never even seen the scene and everything. So, like, I purposely have been waiting until I watch the movie to see the scene. And I'm not going to spoil it, just in case if anyone out there is listening to this that hasn't seen Christine. And just to be clear, we're referring to 2016 Christine, like Morgan said, not the 80s movie that's based on the Stephen King book. We're not referring to that movie. Two completely different movies and everything. So this is not on my list. I don't want to ask Chelsea because I'm going to guess this is her number one. So we'll just wait until after I talk about my number two. Number two for me is the first thing that I saw Rebecca Hall in. This was around the time where I started getting into film. It was the year 2010. So there was a lot of really exciting films that came out and everything. And I have to preface this by saying that I'm a huge fan of the city that this movie takes place in. I love a lot of movies set in the city. I love how over the top the accents are depicted on screen in movies that are set in the city. So I'm going to go with The Town from 2010. This is, in my opinion, the best thing that Ben Affleck has directed. I don't think he's ever directed anything better than this. I know that there could be arguments made about some of the things that he's done, but for me personally, I'm a sucker for crime, thriller, heist stories. I love a good suspense crime film. And for this being his second outing behind the camera, I actually really think that he was able to direct a lot of these scenes with so much suspense to the point where you're on the edge of your seat and you're not sure where it's going to go. I also found the character arcs to be very engrossing too, because the movie doesn't shy away from the fact that these people are doing very bad things. And I like that Ben Affleck doesn't make you think that this person is good, even though you could recognize that he's done bad things. Not just his character, but his entire squad, which is Jeremy Renner and a few other people whose names I do not know. Apologies to the other people. John Hamm plays the cop that's chasing these guys, which I think is a really cool casting. For him being in the midst of his Mad Men run, playing Don Draper, to playing the cop on the run, chasing all these people, I think that's really cool. And then you get Blake Lively, who plays Jeremy Renner's sister, but then you get Rebecca Hall, who is really the heart of this movie. She plays an employee at a bank that they rob in the beginning of this movie. And then from there, a relationship blossoms between her and Ben Affleck's character, and then Ben Affleck has to hide the fact that he has done all these criminal acts and everything. There's nothing groundbreaking about the story by any means, but I think it is a really engaging crime thriller. There's a lot of sequences that do leave me on the edge of my seat. The sequence where they're robbing, I don't know what it was they were robbing. I think they were just robbing a store and they had those very terrifying nun masks on. I remember when I first saw the trailer for this, that image really haunted me, and I was not looking forward to seeing that scene when I did end up watching the movie later on. And let's just preface this by saying that Brian and nuns don't do very well at all. Nuns terrified the crap out of me. That's why I haven't watched Immaculate yet, because of that. But also I've heard very middling things about it. I digress. My favorite aspect of this movie, besides like the performances, is the final heist in this movie. I grew up in a household where my dad was a Sox fan. So naturally seeing Fenway Park being robbed on screen was really, really cool. And I thought that entire heist sequence was so well choreographed and so well done. And again, for Ben Affleck, only in his second outing as a director to direct a moment that big in scale was really exciting. And Rebecca Hall, this being the first thing that I ever saw her in, I immediately became a fan of her. It wasn't one of those cases where I was like, oh, I need to see more stuff with her to become a fan. No, I was a fan immediately when I watched this movie. I loved her arc. I loved her character. I loved her chemistry with Ben Affleck. I loved everything that she did in this movie. And I love the movie itself. I think it's a really exciting film. It's kind of crazy that Ben Affleck hasn't directed anything as good as this. I like him as a director, although there hasn't been anything besides this that has made me go, OMG, I think he's like this incredible filmmaker. But this one I really do admire. And again, I'm a sucker for films in this genre. And it's a Boston film, so naturally, again, I'm going to be very much on top of that, even though I'm not from Boston. So yeah, The Town is my number two. I want to know your guys' thoughts on this movie. I'm curious to know if you guys have seen it, if you like it, if you don't like it, if you're a fan of movies in this genre, and if this is one that you do like. I'm curious to hear your guys' thoughts on this movie. Like, how do you feel about it as a film itself? And then what's your takeaway on Rebecca Hall's work in this film?
It's definitely one of those films I wish that Hollywood would still make, like the mid-budget, either like heist crime kind of thing, much like The Departed. We just need like these kinds of movies being made and made at decent budgets with movie stars. Like, come on, let's have a good time here. Let's get to the theaters. I think Rebecca Hall is the best part of this movie once again, because I'm not sure everybody's in the same movie on this. I think Ben Affleck and Rebecca Hall understand the assignment. Jeremy Renner feels like he's in a different movie. And then Blake Lively is coming from fucking Pluto.
She's wearing those traveling pants, just coming straight in, coming in hot.
She is coming in hot. And it is so funny. So I think I am taken out of her scenes. But I do agree, like, oh gosh, I can't remember who the editor of this movie is, but I think that's like one of the most successful elements of the movie is just, we don't get solid crime thrillers.
Yeah. I'm looking it up right now. Titchener. Oh, he's edited a lot of stuff. He's worked with Robert Altman, PTA, M. Night Shyamalan,
yeah,
Ang Lee.
Yeah, he did like Zero Dark Thirty, Phantom Thread. Yeah, I just saw it. Oh my gosh. But yeah, it's one of those like, I like all the elements of this movie. I do wish it had more to say because I don't think Ben Affleck's a good actor. I do think he's a better director than he is an actor. But it's one of those movies. I do wish we just had more films like this in theaters and not just the straight to DVD, straight to Hulu version.
Yeah.
Not as well made.
I agree. Like a film that came out recently that was kind of a mid-budget crime thriller heist movie was Widows with a powerhouse of a cast. And it's unfortunate
and
that
nobody
went and saw it.
For like all of us.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh,
the
so
disrespect
good.
To the cast of Widows. But yeah, I just, to kind of echo what Chal said, I think that Rebecca Hall is definitely the best part of that film. I mm-hmm. think, you know, the film opens with her at work and it's being robbed, and then she gets dumped on the side of the road and mm-hmm. she has to like figure out how to make herself safe again. And I think that by having her as the anchor, even if she's not the main character, she's the anchor of the film. I think it's really smart. Like Ben Affleck probably also watched The Prestige and was like, that lady knows how to make sure that a film has a center so that other people can be crazy and wild and make really bold choices. And we have someone who understands what's happening in like a very grounded human way. Mm-hmm. And that's what she brings to The Town. And yeah, if we could just avoid putting Jeremy Renner in anything, that'd be cool. I don't think that he's ever understood an assignment, whether that's an acting.
He doesn't do his homework.
No, I mean, the man, it doesn't understand what's happening. He thinks that he can be a rock star with whatever singing
voice.
No,
I will say, bring back the Jeremy Renner app, but that's for another moment. Mm-hmm. Everybody Google Jeremy Renner app. It's
yes.
an insane
Yeah. Anyways, yeah, this is also a Jeremy Renner hate account. And when I mean this, I mean myself. Don't like Jeremy Renner in any way, shape, or form. So, yeah, he brings down that film so tremendously that it is kind of impressive how bad he is.
Which is crazy because Rebecca Hall elevates this to a whole new level. Like, it shouldn't be this good of a performance in what should just be a run-of-the-mill mid-budget movie. Which is like, we just need those movies, I think, because not everything has to be Citizen Kane. Like, we can have our silly movies, we can have our just regular crime thriller, we're going to have a nice couple hours, and then go home and make dinner. And I think that's one of those movies you just need. You can watch it with your family, everybody's like, going to have a nice time, and then we're going to check out.
Absolutely. And now it's time. Our number one. Chels, what is your number one and why is it your number one? Tell us what your number one is.
I mean, my number one has already been spoken for. Not only is this her best performance, I do think it is like the single best performance, even if it's not her best film, like overall, even though she's been in so many good films. But this movie, back to my stress cinema, like, you know what's going to go on. But whenever you see her, whenever you see the title Christine, you know what's going to happen. You're waiting for it to happen. And then you see every step leading up to her just unraveling as a human. And it is so tragic and sad. And she plays every note perfectly. The film is in no way demonizing this woman, which I think is its greatest success. It is just showing an unfortunate soul who is just not thriving out there and gets to her lowest point and realizes it, because I think if you work in local news, you're gonna like not be okay because you see the horrors of the world and it gets to her. And I do think not only is this her best performance, I think it is one of the greatest performances ever put to cinema. Like, I loved this. Came out in 2016. Famously, I have talked about this film pretty recently about like all the great women of this. Rebecca Hall gives the single best performance of that year, of probably the last 50 years. I don't know. It's a film I've seen multiple times somehow because I am unwell. And it is filled with a beautiful cast of, like, you get random people like Tracy Letts, her husband Morgan Spector, the hot man that I will never shut up about, Timothy Simons, Morgan's, what, Instagram BFF?
Yeah.
Michael C. Hall, Maria Dizia, Jay Smith Cameron. Oh my gosh. The cast is stacked with the who's who of character actors. And then just buckle up. Heartbreak feels good in a place like this, except you're going to feel real bad after. It is a perfect film. I'm just in awe that it even got made, and I wish more people had seen it.
Excellent pick, Chels. I mean, thanks. What an incredible film. And yeah, it is like one of the greatest performances of the past at least 25, 30 years. Like,
yeah, it's just one of those, like, you see it and it is never going to leave you.
No.
And you're just gonna, like, I guess this is our Roman Empire. Boys like Roman Empire, girls like
Rebecca Hall and Christine. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's just one of those famous things. And then once you get to the real life story aspects, it's just so heartbreaking and so beautifully portrayed, so gentle with the subject matter, and it doesn't make her an idiot. And I really appreciate that because it's so easy to demonize people. And this film doesn't.
Yeah, I really need to watch it. I really need to sit down and just...
Make sure you have sunshine after watching this. Watch it, like, after breakfast. And then make sure you fill your day with, like, activities that won't make you depressed.
Would you recommend...
Kidding. It is such a sad movie.
Do you recommend... Say I was in the mood to watch another movie. Do you recommend I put on some of that super, 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 super comedic to help me feel good again? Or do you think I should just not watch anything for the rest of the day?
I would say, like, mid-morning movie, take yourself to a nice lunch, maybe go watch Godzilla versus Kong, smooth brain cinema, go watch something funny after Godzilla versus Kong, then do your Wikipedia deep dive, because that's just one of those, it's one of those films that makes you want to read everything about it, and then watch some like silly sitcoms, because it is, oh, it's gonna mess with you.
Yeah, I want to pose a quick random question to all of you. I know that you're a big sitcom person, Chels, but I need to ask, like, what your favorite sitcoms are. Give me three sitcoms that each of you love. Chels, let's start off with you.
The Golden Girls, my number one, forever and always. Happy Endings. If you need something that is Looney Tunes live action, it's Happy Endings. And then I'm torn on the last, because I could go classic or I could go contemporary. I'll just give you both. Abbott Elementary is my only appointment TV. The Traitors is gone. And then The Facts of Life, because I could recite entire episodes. It's the first show that had a whole all-female cast, starting with the second season. It was the first show to ever do that. And a lot of the stuff holds up. Like, so much of that show holds up today, and it's kind of eerie. They also invented Facebook, so look out, Zuckerberg. Look out.
You take the good, you take the bad, and you take them both, and then you have.
There you go.
And Morgan, what about you?
Yeah, so I'm not going to choose any that Chelsea just picked. I'm going to go Mary Tyler Moore.
Okay.
Love that show. I have to go The Brady Bunch, because I'm obsessed with everything Brady Bunch. We can off the pod talk about how deep that obsession goes, but
yep.
I love The Brady Bunch on like a spiritual, almost cult-like level. And then since it brought Chelsea and I together, Community, because it's a lovely, lovely time.
How excited are you guys for this movie to finally be happening?
I'm going to refer everybody to the Community Rewatch podcast for my thoughts on Community, because I feel like that's my toxic relationship, is Community. It is a show that is sometimes good, sometimes terrible, and I will never get out of that relationship.
Yeah. Yep. No, that's correct. Yeah. It's an unhealthy relationship, but buckling up for a movie.
Yep.
Good picks. We've good committed. Picks. I love all those picks. I love all those picks. I don't know what my favorite sitcoms are. I have to really sit down and think about that. I'm currently rewatching Brooklyn Nine-Nine because my life feels like shit.
And
that show just helps bump me up. I'm currently rewatching and I'm on season two right now, and I'm just so happy watching that. Just such a good show.
Watch that after watching Christine.
Binge all the Halloween episodes of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh, those are the best episodes. Those are the best ones. Those are the best
Brooklyn
ones.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine is that it's like the Law & Order SVU fantasy of what you want the police to be. It's just like, oh, this is what it should be. And also, these are all the hottest, funniest people I've ever seen in my life.
Right. Absolutely. I can't think of an older sitcom that I love. Like, older... Yeah, I really can't think of one on top of my head. I will say my favorite contemporary comedy show. It's not really a sitcom, but it's more comedic. And I know that Chels is a big fan of the show. I'm going to choose Mythic Quest as my favorite comedy show on TV right now.
So good. Cannot wait for it to return. It is filming, y'all.
Cannot wait. Cannot wait for that. Okay. So now, Morgan, it's time for your number one. What is your favorite Rebecca Hall film of all time?
So my favorite Rebecca Hall film is a left field pick because no one has seen this movie, and it's from 2010 and it is called Please Give. It has Rebecca Hall playing the granddaughter of this curmudgeonly old woman in New York City. And this woman lives next to a couple played by Oliver Platt and Catherine Keener. And they're just waiting for this woman to die because they've purchased her apartment. And when she passes away, they will get her apartment to be able to expand their own apartment. And yeah, I think that Rebecca Hall is just so magical in this film. I also recently rewatched this because it holds such a special place in my heart. And I was like, is this truly my number one Rebecca Hall film? And after I finished watching it, I said, indeed, it is just... She is just so magical in it as this woman who's lost a lot of her family, and she's having to care for this elderly family member who is not nice to anyone. And it's her just continually trying to see the good in other people. And there's a scene kind of towards the end of the film with her and Catherine Keener that is just so emotionally powerful to see these two women together. It's just a wonderful film, and more people should watch it. It's a Nicole Hoff Center film.
Fully a film I took off my list just so Morgan could talk about it, because it is such Morgan cinema. It's great. It had such a good cast. Like, Lois Smith, I am always happy to see Lois Smith. The woman has kissed James Dean and was in Lady Bird. She has the range.
I just saw a film with her at South By. She was just in a movie I saw at South By.
Yeah, probably. She's in so much stuff. And I'm like, you're in your 90s and working, girl.
That's nuts. She's so That's cool. That's nuts. You know, when Morgan was talking about this film, I had no idea that Nicole Hoff Center was involved in this. So automatically, that makes it very high on my watch list. Admittedly, I haven't seen everything that she's directed. I've only watched enough set, and I loved that movie so much. That movie really moved me a lot. And you know, it's funny, when I saw it when it came out, I hadn't watched The Sopranos at that point. So watching that movie with my parents, and then like them just being so moved, considering that they saw him as, you know, Tony Soprano, and then to see him do a complete 180 and play like arguably the sweetest man in the whole world, and that was right after he had passed away. It's just so tragic.
Got the Oscar nomination.
I agree.
Bitter about.
I agree.
That
is
the Jared Leto year where I hate that win.
That performance is so up the Academy's wheelhouse. It's kind of upsetting that they didn't nominate him for that. And now having seen The Sopranos, and then I rewatched the movie right after I saw it, I'm just like, yeah, I mean, now I really, like, I get it. I get why everyone was so sad when he passed. He was such a talented guy. And yeah, enough said is great. I know that Morgan, you were very positive on her most recent film, right? You heard my feelings, right?
Yeah.
You were positive on that, right?
Love that film. It's also very much Morgan cinema. I mean, they make a reference to An Unmarried Woman, and I'm like, this literally was made for me. Thank you.
Yeah, I do need to watch that. Yeah, I need to delve more into her catalog. And yeah, this film is immediately going to go on my watch list. So that means now with my number one, we talked about it earlier in the episode, and the reason why I put it as my number one is because it is my favorite performance from Rebecca Hall. It's my favorite thing that she's acted in, and that is The Night House, of course. I will just say that when I went to go see this in the theater, one of the worst theater experiences of my entire life, to the point where I had to get up during the movie and actually go complain. So I missed 5 minutes of this movie when I went to go see it, but I've obviously seen the full thing since. I just rewatched the movie the other day. I have to just say that, you know, Morgan briefly brought up how this movie tackles grief and a very, very tough subject. Just to give people context, like, it does tackle loss and, you know, in a very tragic matter. And I don't want to really get into it because it's a very tough subject for me to talk about. It's a very personal subject for me as someone who has dealt with people who unfortunately lost people in his life to what Rebecca Hall's husband, what happened with him in this movie. And, you know, I just want to say that in the theater watching this and just knowing that teenagers were coming in and like laughing at this movie, I'm like, yeah, I know exactly what you are. Then I had to basically report them to the manager. I'm like, these teenagers, this is where the old side of me came. And I'm like, wow, I really am an old man now if I'm going to report teenagers at a screening. The youths, the younglings, I'm like, these fucking dumb fucks are laughing at a movie that tackles this subject and it's not funny. Like, it pissed me off so much. But anyway, I don't want to vent on the podcast. I want to talk about the good. This movie is absolutely haunting to me. It's not your conventional horror film where it's relying so much on the scares. It's really relying on the story. And it gives such great... I think with this movie, the fact that the characters are so well written and well realized, and you feel for Rebecca Hall's character. Again, this movie isn't relying on the scares. This is a psychological horror film, but at its core, it is a drama about grief and loss and moving on and acceptance. And the fact that Rebecca Hall's character is in a very emotionally distraught place with what happened to her husband and how she's unsure if she'll ever heal fully. And you can never really heal from what happened in this movie. But I really love the approach of this film, and I think Rebecca Hall's performance is absolutely monumental, to the point where I really do think that in terms of the performances that year, that was some Oscar caliber work on her part. I thought she was genuinely incredible in it. And I knew
there
that when
room
I was
for her, there was room.
There absolutely was. That was not my favorite Best Actress lineup, even though my favorite person in the whole world won Best Actress that year. I just think that what she was able to bring to that was really unlike anything else. I mean, it was tackling grief, loss, and trauma in a vein that kind of reminded me a little bit of Hereditary, where it wasn't so focused on the scares. It was more of a character drama where it just focused on the people grieving and dealing with their losses and everything. And it really is a disservice of how Searchlight was marketed in this movie, to where they tried to make it look like a straight-up horror film where it's jump scare one after the other. And there certainly are jump scares throughout the movie, but there's not as many as people would think. I do remember when the movie came out, there were people that are like, I was so disappointed with The Night House. I expected a scare fest and everything. Clearly, people don't see Eternal Fear as like the proper scares that they could watch on screen. Eternal Fear is something that I love to see on screen, because not everything has to be shown to you every 5 seconds. Like, some of our struggles as human beings is what we deal with eternally. And I love seeing that conveyed in this movie. I really loved the film, and Rebecca Hall really, like, this movie reminded me that she really is an overlooked talent in this business, that she needs to get more notoriety and everything. And we've been saying this throughout the episode, she definitely needs to get more recognition. But it's nice to know that there are films like this. The Dog agrees with me. It's nice to know that there are films like this, to where we have people celebrating what Rebecca Hall does. And yeah, I love the film. I love the approach. I didn't love the way it wrapped up, though. I had that problem when I first saw the movie, but then when I watched it again, I'm like, I still don't know how I feel about the ending. Other than that, though, it's a very deep, compelling horror film that I wasn't anticipating vibing with as much as I did. And the fact that I walked out of it just celebrating and singing about it just comes to show how there are good horror films that come out nowadays. And it really is a masterful showcase of what Rebecca Hall is able to do in front of the camera as an actor. So yeah, The Night House is my number one Rebecca Hall film of all time.
Obviously, we sang its praises earlier. It's an excellent pick. And yeah, I still remember there is a part where her character falls asleep and is awoken to extremely loud music. And I was watching it in the movie theater. And I kind of, as Chelsea had said too, like, it's such a visceral film. And I had such a visceral reaction to that very hard shift, that I think that's so much more effective than like blood and guts and body horror and all of that.
Right. Agreed.
Stress cinema, baby.
And we're going to talk about some of the films that didn't make the cut. But before we do that, we're going to recap our list from 5 to 1. So, Chelsea, what is your list?
My list is number 5, The Gift. Number 4, Resurrection. Number 3, Professor Marston and the Wonder Women. Number 2, Godzilla vs. Kong. Number 1, Christine.
And Morgan, what is your list?
My list is number 5, The Awakening. Number 4, The Night House. Number 3, Professor Marston and the Wonder Women. 2, Christine. And number 1, Please Give.
And to recap, my list coming in number 5 is The Gift. Number 4, Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman. Number 3, The Prestige. Number 2, The Town. And number 1, The Night House. So that is it with our list. So now it's time that we give a shout out to some of the films that didn't make the cut. So Morgan, let's start with you. What are some films that you want to give a shout out to?
Oh, goodness. I mean, I think that she's great in everything that she does. I've literally watched hot garbage movies and miniseries that do such a great disservice to her. And she is like, I'm a master at acting. So, I mean, like, I think Tumble Down is a film that she's really great and endearing in. I mean, gosh, what else? I wasn't quite.
Starter for 10. Great.
Starter for 10. Oh my gosh. And
it,
like,
also has like James McAvoy.
So many British people. So it's like many British endless people. British people. I do recommend if you want to see like a young Benedict Cumberbatch. I also love that they're friends because of that movie. I mean, we've got her in Teen Spirit as a record executive, and I love her in the like 15 minutes of screen time that she has there. Yeah, she's also been in like Parade's End, another, it's a mini series that she did with Benedict Cumberbatch.
And I liked that mini series more than others.
Yeah, but we weren't doing mini series, so I couldn't add it, but it's on Letterboxd, so that's why I'm mentioning it. Yeah, so I think that those would be kind of the big ones that I would want to mention from her.
Chelsea, what about you?
I mean, I purposely didn't pick Please Give, The Awakening, and The Night House because of that, because Morgan hasn't covered. Bosco, that is so rude. I will mention that movie. Bosco is also saying Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. I guess he's seen it already. But yeah, there's just so many good things. Like even the BFG, which is not a good movie, I find her delightful in. So
I would love for her to work with Spielberg again. I would love for her to work with him again. That would be a really cool pairing. I like the BFG. Didn't love it though. That was actually
like not a good movie, but she's like captivating. She's just got it.
I agree. I guess for me, in terms of opera matches, there's not too many. I mean, Godzilla versus Khan, I guess, is an honorable mention. I'll be honest. I really don't have as many honorable mentions as I thought. Teen Spirit, I thought, was okay. It was fine. But I liked her in it. And Everything Must Go, which was one of her earliest films. She did that with Will Ferrell in one of his serious turns. I always admire whenever a comedic actor tries to go into a serious mode. And Frost Nixon was a play that I read in high school. And then I watched the movie, and I really liked that movie a lot. I find that to be a really engrossing watch. And I liked her in it. I forgot how much of the movie she's in. I believe she... I don't remember because I've only seen that movie once. And yeah, I liked it a lot. I like movies like that. And yeah, those are honorable mentions for me. Now, let's briefly talk about her upcoming projects. So she has two films lined up right now. Obviously, Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, which we're doing this episode in honor of. And then she is currently filming Ella McKay, which is a new film directed by James Earl Brooks. He hasn't directed a film since 2010, so this is very exciting that he's coming back behind the camera directing a film. And the ensemble here is really exciting. You got Emma Mackey headlining. You also got Woody Harrelson, Iola Debris, Kumail Nanjiani, Jamie Lee Curtis, Albert Brooks. It's set to come out sometime next year, which is really exciting. And on top of that, she also has an upcoming TV series in the works called The Listeners, which follows an English teacher as she is tormented by a continuous humming noise that seemingly only a few people are able to hear. Very interesting premise. The director of Zola is behind it. That's the only other person that I know that's involved with this project.
Yeah, Janixa Bravo.
Very interesting stuff.
Tessa Thompson's involved in that, I believe, too.
I'm trying to see if I see her name. I don't see her name here. Maybe I'm just not looking on the right page. But yeah, so she has those projects coming out, and I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on each of these projects. So let's start off, obviously, with Godzilla X Kong, since that's coming out very, very soon. Let's start off with Morgan, because I feel like Chelsea has more to say about this movie. So what is your anticipation level for Godzilla X Kong?
I mean, I'm super excited. I will see anything that's under 2 hours. I will see literally anything with Rebecca Hall in it. I mean, I watched that Iron Man movie and I had no idea what was happening in any of it. And she was in it for like all of 2 seconds. And I still gave that film money because she deserves money.
Morgan, man, Chelsea.
Bad Iron Man movie. What a bad movie. Did not make sense. So glad Jessica Chastain left that and Rebecca Hall got paid. obviously, so hyped for Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. I'm just so happy that we can go back to the Hollow Earth and have a nice time. I know it'll be perfectly fine. I'm going to have some nice popcorn and leave my dogs for 2 hours and it's gonna be bliss. That's all I got. It's gonna be amazing. It does reunite her with Dan Stevens, and they did a movie together, which
not Starter for 10 he was in, right? And the and Permission.
Yeah, exactly.
With her hot husband, who is in that too.
I care deeply for her hot husband, y'all. And that is his name. Hot. Oh my gosh. I won't say what I was about to say. But yes, I am glad Rebecca Hall is starring in Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. And I am curious about the other stuff, like her TV series coming up and the James L. Brooks, because the last James L. Brooks, the last few films were not great. Like, I mean.
I thought he was in director's jail after that last one that he made.
He will never be in director's jail because Terms of Endearment made so much money.
And it like, won Best Picture.
It was also just like a genuinely amazing movie. But
it was.
That's what I mean when I say we should have more mid-budget movies. Like Terms of Endearment is just like today would be a run-of-the-mill, might go to streaming.
Mm-hmm.
This movie made like adjusted for inflation bajillion dollars. And it was so good.
Well, think about what Cord Jefferson just said at the Oscars. Instead of having one $200 million movie, why can't we just have 10 $20 million movies?
Exactly. So very curious to see how it is because it's a great cast, but also he is able to get the budget to make movies with great casts.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're bad because I have seen Spanglish and it is garbage. I have seen How Do You Know? It is garbage.
What's Spanglish? Is Spanglish the one with Sandler? That's the one with Adam Sandler, right?
It is so bad. Actively hates women as well.
Damn. I haven't seen that one.
I mean, you don't have to waste your time. It
yeah,
is not
I mean, the only reason why I wanted to watch it was because I like seeing, again, like I said, I like seeing comedic actors do more serious projects. But, you know, it's okay. If I miss one serious Sandler movie, I'm okay with missing that one because I haven't heard the best things about it.
It is very cringeworthy, to say the least. But right. I'm curious. I hope this next one's good.
Yeah. Morgan, what about you? How do you feel about her Ella McKay and this TV show that she's working on?
Yeah, again, I will literally, if she just wants to like stand in a room and talk about gardening, I will watch it. But yeah, I think it's a solid cast. I love the fact that it does have Iowa Debris in it because I think that she is fantastic and wonderful. Not hot on everyone else, you know, some of the people I do really like in this film, but maybe I'm not as I will drop everything and watch their work regardless. That said, again, you have Rebecca Hall and Iowa Debris, and I hope that they both have a chaotic energy that they bring to it because I know that they can. And
I think I'm more excited for the press tour than the actual movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Godzilla X Kong, I mean, I'm looking forward to being entertained. I hope it's a really fun time, and I'm sure it will be harmless fun. Ella McKay, I'm actually very excited for because, I mean, I haven't seen everything that James L. Brooks has directed, and he actually hasn't directed that many movies, but his name is just so pivotal to the industry because, like, the projects that he's produced and everything. He was a producer on a film that the Simpsons, of course, and a film that me and Morgan recently talked about on her podcast, Big. He was a producer on that film. So he's tackled a lot of projects and everything. And he also has worked with Kelly Fremont Craig on her movies, which is really cool too. He's produced both of them, Edge 17 and Are You There, God's Me, Margaret, two fantastic films. And I do love this cast. And yeah, Iowa Debris being in it, of course, we're in the time where Iowa Debris is like the star to look out for. And she's like great in everything she's in. I mean, this is like the time to be an Iowa Debris fan. I mean, last year alone, she was like in five movies. And then, of course, she had The Bear, which is still ongoing. I watched a film with her at South by Southwest this year. And it was so funny that the director literally called her while she was on set in Chicago for The Bear, which is really funny. I'll have to share that video with you guys. I'll have to share it with you guys because it's really, really great. Yeah, I'm interested in Ella McKay, and this TV show that Rebecca Hall is involved with sounds really cool as well. It doesn't sound like the most groundbreaking concept, but Rebecca Hall being in it definitely has my interest for sure. And also, I can't believe I forgot to say this. Maybe someone brought it up and I just wasn't listening. Do you guys agree that Rebecca Hall does one of the great fake American accents? Like, her American accent is, like, really flawless. Like, when I saw The Talent, that was the first thing I saw her in. I was like, oh, my God, this woman's great. And then when I saw her in the interview that she wasn't American, I'm like, the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, her mother was American. And so I think that she kind of got the best of both cultures in her upbringing. But yeah, like, her mother's American. She was surrounded by literally all of the greatest actors and directors and choreographers, because again, her mother was an opera, so a lot of choreography in that. So I think that she just got to hear from a lot of people, and you can just kind of tell that she does her homework when it comes to that accent work.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and I would also like to say, oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
So she's in a movie called The Listener, which has Tessa Thompson, and then she's going to be in a TV series called The Listeners. So that's
not confusing at all.
But I will say,
what makes the TV show interesting is the Genixa Bravo of it all. Because if you've seen Zola, you're like, oh, this is a perspective. So that's why I'm excited for the show.
Yeah. Oh, it also has Gail Rankin, who played Sheila the She-Wolf on Glow.
It's so funny. This Listener movie actually comes out very, very soon. And it's directed by Steve Buscemi. Oh, wait a minute. I know about this movie. It played at Tribeca last year. I didn't get to see
and
it.
And more importantly, it has Tessa Thompson in it.
More importantly, it has Tessa Thompson. She's the only on-screen role in this movie, so that's pretty cool. So my final question for you guys before we close out this episode is, usually I would ask people if they could have dinner with one character, who would it be? My flip question this time, the new question is, what is a genre that you want to see Rebecca Hall tackle that she hasn't done? And who is a director that you want to see her work with that she hasn't worked with before? You could combine the question into one where you could be like, I want her to be in this film directed by this filmmaker. What would you guys choose? Chelsea, let's start off with you.
Oh, goodness. I feel like she has done every genre, which is funny because she's done, like, historical romance, and she's done psychological thrillers and dramas and fantasy. Like, she's done so much. I want more romance films, either rom-coms or rom-drams. Like, where's her Before Sunrise? Like, that vibe of a film. So maybe Rebecca Hall in that type of movie directed by, oh gosh, we don't have, like, hot people directors anymore because there's, like, no sex in cinema. I don't know. Mariel Heller. I feel like she could do it.
Okay.
Mariel Heller can do anything, though.
That's a good choice. That's a good choice. Morgan, how about you? Who would you pick?
Okay. So not a genre that I usually love, but I feel like she would make me love it, which is Western.
Because she could do that.
She could totally do that. And I think someone who has done a neo-Western film that I would love to see Rebecca Hall work with is Nia DaCosta. Once again, the Tessa Thompson of it all. Nia DaCosta did Little Woods, which is an incredible neo-Western drama. And so if she wanted to tackle, like, a more traditional Western, I think I would be there for that and have Rebecca Hall in it.
I would vibe with that. I feel like she would really knock it out of the park in that genre. For me, I'm a guy who adores the coming-of-age genre. That's my favorite. I would love to see her in a coming-of-age film. And I'm going to pick a filmmaker who has only directed one film so far. But naturally, this is a filmmaker who I will watch do anything, and that's going to be Celine Song. I think it would be really cool to see her collaborate with Celine Song. I know that Celine Song's in the midst of working on her next movie. Who's in that next movie? It's Pedro Pascal, Dakota Johnson, and who else? Chris Evans, right? Is that the right Chris? Or is it a different one?
There's so many. I'm just like,
I know it's not Pratt. Is it Pine or Evans? I don't know which one. Right? Is it Chris Evans? Live fact check on air. Yes, Dakota Johnson, Pedro Pascal, and Chris Evans. And leads to talk the romantic comedy Materialist for A24, directed by Celine Song. Yep. Yeah, let's get Rebecca Hall to work with Celine Song, please. Let's get her to do something like that.
She would too. She's always working with like new first time interesting directors.
So. Yeah, that would it would be a really great collaboration if it's her and Celine
Song.
She's
one of those people who goes out of her way to work with interesting people, and that's what I love about her. Even if like you don't love the project, it's one of those like she helps upstart people, and I love
exactly
that. That's nepotism in action.
Absolutely. So now to close out the episode, what are your guys' final thoughts on Rebecca Hall? We've obviously spent the whole episode glowing about how incredible she is as a performer and even as a filmmaker. So what are your final thoughts on Rebecca Hall? What is something that you want the audience to take away when it comes to Rebecca Hall?
When I say the woman has the range, she literally can do a Please Give, a Resurrection, a Starter for 10, and Christine, and these are all very different movies. And then right in the center of that is Godzilla vs. Kong, because she's a movie star. More movie star Rebecca Hall.
Yeah, isn't it the Lost Culturistas question, is she an actress or a star? And Rebecca Hall is both. She is an actress and a star. Yeah, she's just incredible. And I really hope, too, that she gets the opportunity to direct more. Because I think that she is such a sophisticated director just out of the gate. And I think that women should be given the opportunities to make as many movies as they want, because we do have men that sometimes get to make multiple movies in this same year. And we shouldn't have our most celebrated female directors have a filmography of 10 max.
I agree. I love Rebecca Hall, and I'm really hoping that as the years progress, she'll get more projects handed to her, whether it's her in front of the camera or behind the camera. I'm really hoping that she gives the chance to be showcasing why she is one of the greats working today. And I just want to thank the both of you for coming on to the show today to talk about Rebecca Hall with me. I'm glad that, first of all, I got to have the two of you together on the podcast, and I'm really glad that it was for this discussion. So thank you guys so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Absolutely. And tell the listeners where they can find you online. Where could they find your work? Chels, let's start with you.
Oh, gosh. I'm on Twitter and Letterboxd at Chels725, where sometimes I post or log things. I usually forget, or if I don't like something, I usually don't log it because I don't want people coming for me. And then, yeah, and a rewatch pod where talking about so many different things. And then I've been on Morgan's podcast, which is so good, so much fun. She just had my friend Jesse on talking about Harriet the Spy, one of my favorites. So yeah, I'm promoting Morgan as well.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, you can follow my podcast on Instagram, the Female Gaze, the Film Club, where we release episodes every Sunday. And then you can follow me on Letterboxd, MSML Roberts, where I definitely log everything because I need people to know that theater camp is one of the greatest pieces of cinema of all time. Thank you.
I will put links to Morgan and Chelsea's work in the description below. So go follow them and check out everything that they're doing. And you guys could follow me on all socials at Brian Suffield. You guys can subscribe to this podcast on any social platform, podcasted platform, what have you. I'm so drained. I can't even do the outro correctly. We have a Twitter and Instagram, so you guys can stay up to date what's going on in Film Fragments. Let us know your favorite Rebecca Hall films. I'd be very curious to hear your guys' list. And I just have to make the announcement here. If you guys are following me on social media, whether it's the show or my own personal socials, I did announce that the show is going on a break. So this is the last episode of Film Fragments just for a while. So please don't be alarmed. Don't worry. The show is not over. It's going to come back in full spirit and all greatness and what have you. But I definitely need a break. I'm so grateful for everyone who's listened for the last almost 90 episodes. I've been doing this show for almost 2 years, and I'm so gracious to everyone I've had on, including Morgan and Chelsea, and then obviously everyone who's listened to the podcast for the last 2 years. I'm so grateful, really. I love doing this show. I love recording every single week, talking with fellow film fans about their favorite films from a topic that they're passionate about. And yeah, when we come back, I promise you the show is going to be much better and more exciting. And really, I thank everybody who has continued to listen. Seriously, I'm so grateful. So thank you once again for listening to this episode of Film Fragments. It was so much fun recording this episode, and it's been such a delight recording the show and having you guys listen every single week for the last few years. And I will see you guys for the very next episode of Film Fragments. Take care, everybody.